Automation with Chocolatey with Rob Reynolds.
The Azure DevOps Podcast is a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Each show brings you hard-hitting interviews with industry experts, innovating better methods, and sharing success stories. Listen on to learn how to increase quality, ship quickly, and operate well. And now your host, Jeffrey Palermo.
Welcome to the show. I'm Jeffrey Palermo, your host for helping you and your teams move fast, deliver quality, and run your software with confidence in Azure, all while using everything that the .NET ecosystem has to offer. And I'm doing a ton of online user group speaking, as are others. And so if you run a .NET or Azure-related user group, I'd love to give a presentation for you. And our sponsor here is ClearMeasure, and they make this podcast happen. And we're a software architecture company that empowers .NET teams to be self-sufficient and able to deliver world-class results. And so if we can help, please get in touch. And if you're a .NET software engineer who wants a path to become an architect, we're also hiring. And we're hiring for another role I want to put out a call to. I am actually hiring another apprentice. I've hired an apprentice last year, and that person has grown so fast that he's already been promoted, and I'm coaching him through the next phase. And so I'm hiring a new apprentice, and this apprentice that I'm looking for should either be straight out of schooling, whether that's a degree program or high school. Either is fine. And if you or anyone you know loves to code and is convinced that being a professional software engineer is in your career path, then please apply. And my apprentice is going to work hand in hand with me and R&D, blazing the trail, creating patterns, templates, and guidance for developing and running applications with the latest in .NET and Azure. And then finally, make sure to check out the new video show, Architect Tips. We're on to beyond episode 9, I believe, on that show. Now, I have a really exciting guest today. Longtime friend Rob Reynolds is here with me, and he is the founder and CEO of Chocolatey Software. Rob, welcome to the show. How are you, sir?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. Glad to have you on. There's a you founded Chocolatey over, 10 some odd years ago, so it's been a long time, and a leader in the DevOps automation space because of it.
Oh, yeah, yeah. We go way back before Chocolatey, way back to Tulsa Tech Fest and the days of all of that and parties with Palermo.
Those are fun. Absolutely. In-person conferences are starting back up. Yes. So I'm excited about that. It's been a little dry spell.
Yeah, I'd be like, what is this? I remember these. These are pretty amazing. See people. So.
That's right. But a lot of work for you because you always have the trade show booth and staffing people. So it's a different angle from just kind of walking around meeting people. You got to work.
Oh, yeah. I always felt it was work. And if, not just the sponsorship booth or the vendor booths, but also typically a talk. And I've been blessed to hire more people that come to work for Chocolatey Software. But yeah, sometimes it's, Rob, you're getting the speaking engagement, so you got to prepare a talk. At least I'm familiar with the subject. So, I mean, that's definitely helpful.
Right. I think a lot of the listeners listening here use Chocolatey on a day-to-day basis, kind of an indispensable tool for a .NET developer for just pulling in different dependencies and automating those in DevOps environments. But for the listeners who maybe they've heard of it but just don't use it, can you give us the quick overview on what it does? Maybe how it started, what it does, and why people need to give it a try.
Sure. Oh gosh. So what does it do? Basically, it helps manage Windows software, so software that you have on your box or software that you need to get onto your box. It's kind of, there's a community package repository where you can just kind of opt into that by installing Chocolatey, and you have access to thousands of these pre-created Chocolatey packages that help manage software on your version of Windows. What's great about it is, you know, as developers, we get more familiar with PowerShell and the command line. And so it's really nice to be able to go and just run a command and something would go off and go get some stuff, bring it down and install it. And if it has dependencies or other things that also need to be installed, it gets all of that set up. And so it takes a lot of the manual work that one might have to do to go get a box set up and really, really speeds up that process.
Now, one of the items that I, in our just consulting practice, coaching a lot of teams, it starts with the private build process. And there's always dependencies that need to be on a developer workstation for a particular piece of software to even just do a basic build locally so that, you know, you're ready to check in code, not even waiting for the, you know, the shared integration server. But there's always things that need to happen. And it's really nice to be able to show, oh, no, just put this PowerShell statement in the actual build script. And it's one of those things that makes it possible to clone some new code, run one command, and boom, you actually have a build. Because all that setup stuff, do you remember when it would take days or weeks sometimes to set up a new box or get a new developer on the team?
Oh, yeah. After rebuilding my box a couple of times, that's kind of where the ideas for Chocolatey came from. I had a bad disk replaced by a bad disk.
Gosh,
went through two rebuilds in about 2 weeks, and I was like, there's got to be a better way to do this. And so that kind of prompted the idea of starting to learn about silent installations and figuring out, you know, how to manage that. And then that led to, you know, moving on from that organization and thinking, crap, I need to have this in a more global location. Right. And so that's what kind of birthed the idea of Chocolatey, not to mention that I was on the NuGet team originally. And so when we got together at the MVP summit in, 2011, we were talking about NuGet not moving towards a machine package manager or software manager aspect. Right. So it wasn't going to be that machine binary package manager. And the joke that kind of started was, well, you know, if those types of packages would not be vanilla NuGet packages, they'd be Chocolatey. And so that's where the name came from. And it kind of rolled off the tongue nicely with Chocolatey NuGet. kind of built from there. And then we just kind of dropped off the NuGet piece and it's just Chocolatey. And it uses the NuGet packaging framework, which has been fantastic. So that's been great for us is to have that fully featured framework to just kind of build on top of and continually to improve the user experience on that.
Just recently, I switched computers to a Lenovo P1, I think Gen 3. Anyway, new laptop. And of course, every time I switch, and it's getting better, I think, what are all the things that I installed? And it's just so great now with the things that were installed with Chocolatey. It's like, okay, here's the list. Just set it going and come back a little bit later. And then a whole lot of things. Like just even with recording, Visual Studio Code, OBS Studio. I mean, there's so many things that are in the Chocolatey catalog. Do you know how many there are these days? You got a stat rolling off your tongue?
I know that we surpassed 1 billion downloads last year in total, having that up for almost 10 years. Or has it been 10 years? Almost 10 years. I want to say there's probably something like 8,000 community packages that are out there. I like to also say, because there's organizations and other places that use Chocolatey, they don't use the community repository. We look at that community repository like it's the tip of the iceberg, and it represents about 5% of the actual packages in existence, because there's a whole bunch more under the surface that are in internal repositories or private repositories that people just never see. And typically the reason that organizations might do that is that, on the community side, you have these things called software copyright law and distribution rights. And so you'll see a lot of packages there that are like, well, where's the binaries, right? It's like, you look in there, you look at the instructions that are in PowerShell. It says, here's the URL. Go download these from the official location and install them, right? Well, if that moves or it changes or something, yeah. right? Or somebody puts up a new binary, the checksum doesn't match because we have security on the checksum. So that means it's going to fail, right? And so organizations need a lot more robustness. They need something that they can control a lot better. And so they will actually manage their own repositories for things that they're going to manage and have installed. And so they want something that's a little bit more, like I said, robust, a little more secure, right? Because they have the control of it and other reasons, right? And so we also have people that are like, well, I might be rebuilding a laptop, and so I might have it all on a USB flash drive, right? For everything that I install, and I just pop that flash drive on a new machine, either runs a PowerShell script. That PowerShell script could be Boxstarter. I don't know if you've heard of Boxstarter. That was a little config management light thing that Matt Rock created a while back that will help you get some Windows updates installed. It'll also help manage some of the settings you might have for Windows as well. And then, whole bunches of chocolatey packages that you might want to get installed. So pretty cool. It's really cool to see a community that has grown such as it has and has created these little offshoot projects. And it's kind of seen ones that have grown legs. There's one out there called Windows Remix. And so if you've seen the one where you go to a website and you're like, I want this piece of software, this piece of software, this piece of software, this piece of software, and you click go and it opens up chocolatey and runs the install. That's what Windows Remix does.
Nice. I haven't actually used that one. I need to.
It's either windowsremix.com or windows-remix.com. I can't recall. that one's been around for ages, but we probably didn't promote it as good as we should have. It was Sander, one of the folks in the chocolate community, created that years ago. And one of the things that we were doing on the chocolate site, we've been working on we're probably, so one of our team members, Stephanie, she came up with this idea that we should have something on Chocolatey that gives you that shopping cart experience on Chocolatey's community site. And so she started down this idea, I want to say it was 2019. And of course, it was a good idea, but we had other things in priority that needed to get completed. So that's kind of put together like this little, hey, what do you think, right? Which, the spike didn't take long. We're like, oh, that looks fantastic. Let's put that on the back burner. And so that's one thing that we've pulled off the back burner and actually put it on the schedule for this year. So we'll see that come out. And we call it Script Builder, if I recall correctly. But it allows you to get that little shopping cart experience right on the community site where you're like, this package, this package, this package. And then you're like, next. And like, if I'm a person, I can say, okay, go ahead and give me the script. If I'm an organization, go ahead and give me the different scripts I'm going to need to go get this and put it internal. And then how do I manage it, right? So if I'm using Puppet, Chef, SCCM, what else? Intune, other things, and being able to kind of manage how I would manage getting those things installed using Chocolatey and some integration if I'm using an integration.
Yeah, yeah. Well, there's with the Azure pipelines, because you can't use your own image for the build server, you kind of have to use the host images that are there. A lot of people start off their build. Now, it takes a little bit of time, but they start off their build with some Chocolatey calls. It's like, okay, I need a few more things on this hosted image before I can run my build. And it's worth it to me to, maybe wait 30 seconds or however long it takes to install those things just to still have those hosted agents instead of having to fall back to your own server.
Yeah, I mean, it saves some time there. You can kind of start from a known spot, put some additional things on, and then just kind of roll on.
Right.
Yeah.
There's a lot of developers that use it, but they might not know about the system admin side of Chocolatey, and that gets a lot of usage. Can you describe kind of if the system admins are out there listening? Why they might want to check out Chocolatey.
I mean, that's huge. So one of the things that Chocolatey provides, and as you're developing, you're thinking about shipping software. Typically, when I did a lot of that, it was we prepared either a zip or something. We packaged it up. Package it up could mean just about anything, and said, all right, here's some instructions for the admin. And what we were trying to do is make those instructions go to this file, click this button, watch it. It may ask for some password. You put that in. Watch it. If there's any problem in the output, come get me during the deployment. I might be sitting next to you during that deployment, you know, after work hours. But we try to make it that easy, right? And so that was the whole experience was you double click this thing and you just wait for it to finish. And it's all of the steps, because the way that we start out and a lot of companies start out is they're like, all right, here's what you give to an admin. You give them this book, boom, right? Here's a book. It's the run book. And it's like, okay, take this step, take this step, take this step. And it, good Lord, if they miss a step in there.
Go back to the beginning.
It's like, I finished it and you're like, you're trying to verify it. And then you can't figure out why it doesn't work.
Yeah.
It's because, you know, as humans, we're fallible and we see all these instructions and it's the same instructions every time. Right. And so that tends to make people's eyes gloss over a little bit when they do these deployments, you know, every week or whatever. And so making it as simple as possible, but maybe a run book could tell them this is what's supposed to happen. Right. So they kind of know what's going on and that gives them something to go check. But it's like the simple part is you just got to double click and just wait. I don't want to call it double click deployment, but that's kind of the idea. Right. And so the concept that the Chocolaty has brought in there is that you now have like this unified packaging. So not only your third party installers and other things that you might have dependencies on, your own line of business apps can be packaged up with Chocolaty, right? You can package up scripts with Chocolaty. You can package up just, you know, runtime binaries. So it's really the one thing that Chocolaty gives you is it's a single layer of abstraction, I guess, to manage all of the software in your organization or wherever, right? And so you have this one tool, one interface that you can then use to manage. And it's great that developers can also test that. But you might be pushing that through, say, SCCM, or you might be pushing that through Puppet, you might be pushing that through some Ansible or some other tool. What's great for an admin is now that I have this script written in PowerShell, and if you know, I've been doing admin for a while, I probably have a reasonable ability to think about things in PowerShell, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And so, you know, we've definitely seen a trend where people have gone away from, you know, just this kind of, like I said, that double click, more into kind of these more DevOps type admins, right? Where they are more kind of, I don't want to look at the cousins on the Nix side or on the POSIX side, where they're actually getting a little more hands-on on the keyboard and in the command line. And so what this affords people is this PowerShell language is something that developers can reason about and admins can reason about. And so you got this nice language that translates well to both. And so that's one of the biggest reasons that we went down the PowerShell route, is because being an admin, being a developer, both of them resonate with that particular language. And so kind of the nice thing in there, and so a long way around here, is when you're an admin and you have this single pane that you can kind of manage the software going in, a lot of the things that you have to worry about become a lot easier, right? Because then you're sort of managing these things. You get this lovely versioning, right? That comes right along with the framework. You get this dependency management that comes right along with the framework. And so if you can imagine, you know, I needed to install this thing on this system that already had other apps. Sometimes we do that, right? And sometimes admins are wanting to save on space. And so let's use a terrible example. And let's say that one required a new version of Java, and you had another one on there that didn't work with a new version of Java. So you'd actually restricted the versions. You tried to install that new thing and just worked. But if you use something like Chocolaty, you try to install that new thing, you'd actually go, hold on a second. I have to upgrade this other thing because this other thing says it can't work with that version. And so it actually stopped me and give you something to do. Because the worst thing is you install something and then 2 to 3 days later, you actually figure out this new thing you put on there broke another application. That's 2 days of lost work while you're trying to figure this out. And Chocolaty's stopping that right at the front. And so this is a huge benefit for admins. The other nice thing is a lot of times if you're using tools like SCCM or Intune or whatever, your testing is in production, right? Unless you're a very large business that has afforded the ability to have multiples. Now, you could say, hey, I'm doing canaries, but still, you're testing on one or two production systems. The best thing that you could do is actually take that out of the picture, use a packaging framework and be able to actually test something and say like Vagrant or other things that, that may mimic some of your production environments. And then your delivery can be done through SCCM or Intune or whatever, but you've already tested and built that confidence. And so that's, you know, really the, was it software at the speed of packaging, as we like to say.
Yeah. Nice.
There's a lot of benefits. There's a lot of benefits to using a packaging framework. You're not reinventing the wheel. We did a calculation years ago and we came to a figure like if, you know, an organization, developers or whatever, and they decided to reinvent concepts of chocolatey, they would be spending, you know, greater than $500,000 of their own company's money to figure out how to do the exact same thing that chocolatey could do for them.
Right.
So that doesn't make sense.
And everybody does this. It's the same thing with Nougat.org. Right? We used to go to SourceForge or directly to a commercial vendor, get DLL files, copy them to, you know, the disk and reference them. And now Nougat just kind of does that for us. And so instead of installing software on a particular VM or computer, now it's just a line of chocolatey code. So it's I think of it as kind of the corollary, the same thing for software on an operating system.
Yeah, it basically allows you to get a system up and ready to go very quickly and also in a repeatable manner because you have built the script to do it. So you're not like, did I forget something? Right.
Right.
Did I forget that I needed this thing? Oh, I had a configuration. What am I missing here? Because you're rebuilding a system. If you don't have something that like either gives you the steps or something, it's just you always forget something. And then you're spending a week going, can't get my VMware Fusion to work properly. There's something wrong in there, or, you know, whatever it is, right?
Oh, there's something.
Many thanks to our podcast sponsor, Clear Measure. Clear Measure is a software architecture company that empowers clients' development teams to be self-sufficient, moving fast, delivering quality, and running their systems with confidence. Whether starting a new project or developing new technologies or techniques, Clear Measure sets up your team to deliver world-class results. Learn more at www.clearmeasure.com. Clear Measure, empowering software delivery.
The new software, if you do a brand new Greenfield application today on .NET 5, well, a lot of things are a whole lot simpler and you can skate by, but so much software has been around for a long time. We're helping a client with a system that for certain cases, some data came into the system via a Microsoft Access MDB file. And so, right, you got to keep it interesting, right? So, you know, automated deployments, all that stuff, and testing environments and everything. But come to the rescue, chocolatey install, you know, MS Access runtime. And now it's just one line of code and bring that dependency in. And then now it was kind of weird, but now even .NET 5 can read from Access using the Dapper library, linked over to OLEDB, calling to the Windows MS Access runtime.
Oh, wow.
But it works in .NET 5 and it's automated.
That's awesome.
So there's a way. Everything, all this old crusty software that everybody has, there is a way to get it automated.
That almost sounded like a Rube Goldberg machine, but if it works, hey, it works.
it absolutely is a Rube Goldberg machine, but it works the same time every time now.
Same every time. 60% of the time works every time.
Well, imagine the runbook for that, right? Imagine the written out runbook for how to get a computer ready to test that Microsoft Access data ingestion.
We have a runbook on something that we have internally. It's like you need to install the SDK for like Windows 7 or Windows 8. I can't remember, but to install that SDK on like, you know, the newest Windows 10, you actually have to remove or trick Windows into thinking that it doesn't already have the newest version of the framework installed. So you actually have to go and do a registry hack. Then you can install it and then you can put it back. And so we actually have a script that does all of
this. Yeah.
Just to get everything installed so that people can use it. It's crazy.
Exactly. Yeah. I keep on remembering that most of our audience and most of the developer industry now, you know, is probably between 1 in 8 years of time in the industry. So anything that happened more than 8 years ago is kind of like ancient history. And they're thinking, why would you ever do that? That's until they get into a job in an organization that has software that's that old. And then they're like, what is this stuff? We have to do this. Why?
We got to maintain compatibility with these older versions of things. And you're like, oh my gosh. Those are some of the best words ever, right?
Yeah.
Compatibility.
Right, right. And there's a lot of developers that haven't yet seen that they've never actually seen the old style runbook concept. And why was that a thing? Why was that process kind of put in place? And maybe they're just Word documents of instructions now. Mm-hmm. But still, it's, yeah, you got to do this every time. Automate it and make it self-commenting or self-documenting.
Yeah, and I've always thought of the, you know, certain core things to development strategies, the speed development strategies. You don't develop on a shared environment. Shared environments mm-hmm. are for testing or other things, but you want that isolation. So having that developer isolation, which means if you have a SQL server in production, you need a pared down version of that in your local environment so that you can actually go completely offline and actually work on whatever it is. And I was always big on, like, if you have it in production, you probably should have, and you're making changes to the database. And I remember, I think you worked on Tarantino. Am I wrong?
Yeah, that was a long time ago.
And
automated database migrations and database deployments.
Eric Hexter was working on that at the time that we started Roundhouse.
Mm-hmm.
And we were actually looking to do stuff with Tarantino, but I think the ideas that we had in mind were so different, like, because we had there was the sequencing, right? But we thought, well, that's not really that global. We want to do versioning a little differently, and so we ended up with versioning that matches your code, right? So what version is your database on, which at that point was like a foreign concept to a lot of people. They're like, what, 1.0.0, right?
right
like, how do you know you have a match, right? And so we wanted the ability to say, okay, again, that isolation, right? So you want to be able to, everything that you are working on as a developer, be it, database, be it on the file system, be it in the code, whatever it is, you need to be able to replicate all of that locally. And so the access database that you were mentioning, having something that was local for folks or some sort of stub, mock, something that they could put in to kind of give them the ability to see that work is typically important. And it to me, I think that helps reduce defects going into production.
Oh yeah, for sure. Now, you were the original inventor of Roundhouse. I don't know if you had other people help you out along the way, but for the listeners out there, we've talked about automated database deployments and database mm-hmm. migrations versus the state based on other episodes. But I think the last time I looked at the stats of all the open source non-commercial options, it looked like Roundhouse was well above the most popular according to the stats on NuGet.org.
Oh, really?
Have you glanced at those numbers?
I haven't glanced at those numbers. Okay. There's one called like Fly something, but it's a Java base and it had a lot of
Flyway.
The same concepts. Flyway, thank you.
Yeah,
and it had a lot of the same concepts.
I believe Redgate acquired them and is their kind of open source option. But yeah, of the NuGet.org, you got Roundhouse, you got DBUp from the Octopus Deploy guys, and you got AliasQL, which kind of was a branch of the old Tarantino one.
Right on. Now, it was the one that created Roundhouse, kind of built that from the ground up, because we had to sit back and think about what it is we wanted. And for those that don't know, have heard of Roundhouse or maybe Uppercut or Dropkick, these were original tools that were created to help make managing either the infrastructure around a project a lot easier, especially in regulated environments. So we're in very regulated environments, Sarbanes-Oxley and all of that. So we came up with a really fun name, Chuck Norris Framework, mm-hmm. right? But the idea is a very, very serious tools that came with auditing and all kinds of other things, right? Because those things are what we needed. And so Uppercut was what brought about a consistent build for like 90 some projects.
Mm-hmm.
That we had, and Roundhouse is what brought us that consistency and other things with the database migrations. And so we went for the plain old SQL migrations and just wrapping some really interesting things around that. And so like Tarantino and like many of those, there's this concept of an upfolder, which is your DML and DDL changes. You apply them one time, right? And then we used hashing or checksums to look at other things like stored procedures, like views and other things. And if they changed, like if it detected there was a change in the script, it would rerun that script. Otherwise, it wouldn't. Mm-hmm. And then it would record that particular run as an auditing, right? Here's what I did, right? So we'd keep that. And then you would have, what version are we on? And so it wasn't based on a sequence because you could run that same thing several times, but you didn't want the version to go 1, 2, 3, 4. You wanted the version to be whatever the version was. And we gave people the option to pick how they versioned mm-hmm. as well. That was pretty cool. And so then there was an idea. We had the anytime scripts. So that was the anytime to change the every time scripts, mm-hmm. Which was things like permissions and things. You might have a script in there that reassigns permissions. And so you would run it at the end after everything. Yep. So that was a while back. I kind of pass that off to Bigger Noise, Andy. I can't think of his last name right off the top of my head, but I know there was another guy that got involved on that and they moved that, or the other guy actually moved that to .NET Core mm-hmm. a while back. I haven't had the opportunity to go back and look at all of the awesome that they've done since I kind of handed that over. Nice. But that for a while, that was kind of my baby.
Well, and if you're an application developer, it's a critical piece of your automation because every application stores data. And even mm-hmm. if you have document database or blobs or anything else, you always have a relational database of some size. It's got to be managed and it's got to be deployed. So
yeah, and you know, people, your users, they don't like it when you just delete data in production and reduce it. You can't do the same right? thing. So you got to kind of manage what's there.
That's right. Well, you kind of jump back in history on that project, and you started Chocolate. Have been doing that, but at some point along the way, you said, you know what? I've been writing a lot of code here, and now I've been managing other people writing the code. And you kind of made the shift from what I call chief architect to CEO of a company now that is mm-hmm. surrounded about this product. What led you to make that decision, and how was that shift?
So this is kind of interesting. So about a year ago, we all know what happened about a year ago. There was a global pandemic that gave us all this opportunity to kind of sit back and reflect on ourselves if we decided to take the time to do that. And so there wasn't, having that opportunity wasn't all bad. So there was that. The rest of everything surrounding it, terrible.
Yeah, it sucked.
So one of the things that I had to look at was, am I the one that's going to continue to lead this? So a lot of people don't know this about me. My background is I graduated with a bachelor of science in business management, and that had an emphasis in information systems because I did not want to manage people. I thought machines are interesting. I like machines. So that's what I'm going to do. Got my first job as a developer, actually left college thinking I was going to be a DBA, right? So got my first job as a developer and found out I love this. This is fantastic. This is actually what my calling is. And you know, it's funny as I wanted to go back to all these career things because I spent a lot of time in the career center. Developer, software engineer, wasn't even in there at all. Like, and so I've always wondered why that is and if it's there now, because, you know, I found out lots of things about me really mm-hmm. lean towards that type thing because I like to tinker. I like to solve problems that are hard and mm-hmm. Figure out interesting ways of doing that. And so I had a lot of this, what's the idea? Kind of these ideas of inventions and other things.
Yeah, you're an inventor.
Kind of an inventor. So I kind of fell into software development for the state of Kansas because that was the job that became available. And so that's what I went in and I found out I actually really, really enjoy this and feel like this is what I should be doing. And you know, fast forward a few years and you know, Chocolatey starts to become popular and I'm a software engineer working on Ruby at this time mm-hmm. In 2013 to 2017, I think, for Puppet. And this is where I really learned because up until the point that I went to work for Puppet, and Puppet is a configuration manager that works across like lots of platforms, including Windows. And so I went to help out on the Windows side. I always had the tagline, making Windows more awesome. Nice. M-O-A-R. More awesome. And so while I was there, I learned that Chocolaty wasn't just something that developers were using, admins were using, and admins had their own special needs that were, that's a terrible way to put it, had their own needs that were a little different than a developer. So a developer, I get a new machine, I need to provision it, I might need to keep it up to date. Mm-hmm. Admins, they have, you know, a few machines, hundreds of machines, thousands of machines that they are managing. They're trying to keep either consistent or up to date or other things, right? And so their jobs are you know, lots and lots and lots of things. And so they love concepts of automation because it helps manage all of that stuff. Mm-hmm. Because imagine doing 50 machines manually. Now we have 500 machines. And you're like, we need to hire more people. And I know you're going to do it. And so you have to actually go, oh, how the heck do I do that? And so you got to learn how to work with automation. And so you start turning to developers and say, how can I get this? And that's where I think a lot of people learn about Chocolaty and other tools that can help them manage these things. And so for me, I kind of saw that need and we wanted to kind of self-sustain Chocolaty for the long term. And so we started to look at a business model. Mm-hmm. And so we kind of looked at GitHub. We looked at some of the different Microsoft options. We looked at a whole bunch of different things to try to figure out, you know, what's a good model for this. And you know, actually Puppet had a pretty good model too. And that was, you know, kind of this Fossium or freemium type model, right? Mm-hmm. Where you get the original version that's open source, or something might call it open core. And then you have these value add types of things where you can get a commercial side that actually gives you more features. Maybe these features match use cases you have. And so our concentration on our commercial side was towards admins, right? Mm-hmm. So to make it easier for admins to manage all of these windows. Plus, as a developer, I don't like to pay for things. So I always look for the free stuff. And so I knew that you know, focusing in the developer area wasn't going to yield much. Mm-hmm. But admins, they need the help and they are willing to pay. Plus, they typically have budgets to help do that as well. So we brought about Chocolaty for Business, and that, of course, there's other versions or SKUs in the commercial side as well. And that kind of lifted the business into self-sustaining. We introduced that. We talked about it in the Kickstarter 2014, supposed to be delivering a product in 2015. We delivered that product first of 2016 until the Kickstarters went general release to market in May of 2016, somewhere around May. And within a year, I was full-time on Chocolaty. And so I was doing everything from helping out with sales, because I had another person with me that was helping with sales, thank goodness, because that's not my area, right? My area is inventing, right? And making decisions on things that we should, you know, what should we do? What should we build? Those kinds of things I'm good at. Got that thing kicked off and I was doing it all. And of course, doing it all meant I was up all the time. And as we got to hire people, I started to realize that you get past responsibility, delegate, give people that you trust, give them the work, right? And eventually you come to a point, and we came to that point last year where you need to start focusing. And if you're the CEO on a role of looking forward, right? Mm-hmm. And getting out of the day-to-day. And so it, during 2020, had the ability to reflect and say, is that where I want to be? Do I want to be looking forward, or do I want to be back here working on code and continuing that? Even though I love it. And that's the whole reason I went into business, my own business, was so that I could write code. Right. And, the minute you hire people, then you're managing people and you have to make sure that they have things to do. And so the first thing is really easy. You just start delegating things you don't like doing, like, here, do these things, right? And then eventually you have to come to the point where if you want to continue to grow, you start delegating the things that you do like to do, right? And so in 2020, just took that step back, said, which direction do I want to go? And which direction makes the most sense for the organization? Mm-hmm. And kind of chose that direction to start to step back away from the software development and start to focus more on, manage the business, growing the business, you know, bringing in the right people and all of that. And, you know, we're 16 people full time right now. And we are, I think we have three open positions. So we may be to 20 people by the end of the year. And kind of our plan is to go somewhere between 20 some and 50 people, right? In the next, I don't know how many years, right? Mm-hmm.
Plug those positions. Are they engineer positions, sales? What type of people you have open right now?
Right now, there's a sales position. There's actually two sales positions and a marketing manager. Okay. So we're great at creating software, and we're not as good at actually marketing what this stuff does. I think we're kind of good individually at doing it, but like at a mass scale, we're terrible at it. And so we need the help in the marketing side. And so that's what we're looking to hire is get somebody that can kind of help us in that area a little better and be more consistent with it. Because when you have priorities, it's like, which is more important? Ship the code, talk about the code, you know, or fix the bug.
That's right.
Talk about
or convince people to use the code.
Sell the dream, right? So that year was a time where I started picking up and reading more books, starting getting more involved on my growth on the leadership side. I actually had my degree. I have a minor in leadership studies and I was in the military. So I've got plenty of experience in leadership, thought I didn't need to grow. Guess what?
always
be growing. Right. And so that's actually one of our core values at Chocolatey Software is to always be growing. And so, I found that if I wasn't going forward, I was becoming the law of the lid. So if you've read John C. Maxwell, the thing is, as the person on the top, you are the lid on the organization. So you have to continue to get better if you want that organization to continue to be world class. And so that's been my journey, is to just dive into that stuff, right? And kind of jump in and following all kinds of folks on leadership. Plug Entre Leadership for anybody that's out there. Entre Leadership is a tremendous resource.
Dave Ramsey?
Dave Ramsey, Ramsey Solutions.
I almost said Andy Stanley because he has some other.
Andy Stanley's stuff. A good one too. Craig Groeschel is another really interesting. He's the one that is always speaking right here, right into the heart of things. And he's always like, and one of his sayings is, you can have control or you can grow. Mm-hmm. You can have control or you can grow, but you can't do both. And I was like, dang it, Craig, every freaking time. And he's like, and he has another podcast. He has a podcast called the I think it's called the Leadership Podcast, but he has another one where he's talking about if you're getting feedback, you need to pay attention to where you resist the most. Because that's where you need to grow, right? Dang it, Craig.
Yeah.
Again.
We all get transient in certain areas.
So
we want to hold on. Well, awesome. This is, I've learned a lot just kind of hearing the story and everything that we've talked about. Before we go, is there anything in the next version of Chocolatey that people should be watching out for?
I mean, there's always fixes. What's really interesting is I used to have a thumb on Chocolatey, and very tight and close, but kind of stepped back and I couldn't tell you every feature that's shipping in there. I just know there's things that are getting fixed. And
you've relinquished control. That's good.
I've relinquished control. I still say, I'd like to get these little things in there. So one of the things that we did is we split Chocolatey.org in the community repository. So it's community.chocolatey.org to get you to the community stuff now. But when you install the software, it's still pointing to chocolatey.org back into that. And that just redirects. And so a lot of redirects. So we're fixing that as part of 10.16 or whatever the next version is. It may not be 10.16. It was 10.16. It could be 11. It might be already out by the time this podcast shows up. I know, like I mentioned, Script Builder, that's something that's coming. That's pretty exciting. Another thing that we're doing for organizations is what's really interesting is if you look at kind of our progression, we have created products to better help organizations. And even when you're an organization, the community repository is actually not for use for organizations. If you're an organization, if you're a developer in an organization, you can use it great. If you're an admin and you're managing systems and production stuff, you should not be using the community repository. It's actually kind of against the TOS because mm-hmm. that's not considered community use. Mm-hmm. That's more organizational use. And so you set up your own repository. And so...
Say that again, just to be clear. You say if you're a developer mm-hmm. for an organization, then you can.
For your own machines, right?
Because you're just managing your own. Because you're a developer. So for your developer workstation...
If you're an admin at a machine and you're trying mm-hmm. to set up your own machine, yeah, that's fantastic. Use the community. Minute you start to move into like production use, like we're going to roll systems into production or we're going to be pushing out stuff, you want to be in total control of everything in that environment. So that coming back to that hermetic SIL build, right?
Right.
You can't get that if you're using the community repository because you are giving a lot of control and a lot of trust over to something it's done by like volunteers, right?
Right.
That's true. Now, there's some moderation and there's a lot of security stuff over there, but you know that it's still you're kind of passing the buck. And what you're doing is you're actually building technical debt that's going to come to calling at a later time.
Isn't that what bit npm on the Node platform? Somebody modified one of the really popular open source projects. Mm-hmm. Now, whether they did it intentionally, but there was no oversight and it just automatically cascaded and broke tons of systems.
We have oversight. So the left pad one was when somebody deleted a package or a whole bunch of packages, and that one was used in a lot of them. In other package management platforms, that's not allowed. You can't just go delete something. Mm-hmm. You can request it to be deleted and it kind of gets reviewed, but you can't just delete something because it may break things. Right. And so that's always been a long time thing. You can unlist it. So it's not viewed, but people could still install it. The other thing that somebody did, and then what you were referring to is quite malicious. I don't know if their intent was necessarily, I think it was known to be malicious because they were modifying something to put something on mm-hmm. systems.
And mischievous at best.
And so you do that on our community, it'll get flagged. Like it will not make it. So every single version of every package gets moderated. So it goes into this queue. It goes, is it meeting quality? Does it install properly? And then as a human, we're checking for the things, the moderators are checking for things that machines aren't very good at finding. So it's like, oh, look, wow. Yeah, this isn't going to happen. You just got banned. So that's one of the big things that, because I mean, you can be certain organizations and make a mistake and everybody's like, yeah, that's fine. Mm-hmm. If you're an organization that's building something like we are and a mistake happens, even if it's on the community, I mean, it carries a lot more. See, I told you that wouldn't work, right? Because kind of the thing that's out there. And so, yeah, for us, the thing that we're doing that to help organizations is building a premium packages type of repository that they could just use that's offered by Chocolaty Software, mm-hmm. not by the community.
Yeah.
That way they can build trust in it because there's an organization behind the actual repository and they're opting into packages that have gone through a lot of testing and other things before they're offered and would have maybe SLAs and other things behind them. Plus if one's broken, you can always come and ask us to get it fixed, right? And you can, on the community, it's like,
you can post to Twitter, hey, can somebody fix this?
Go to the community maintainer and ask them and see if they help you, right? And so that's the thing. And that's why it's the community side. And that's why a lot of the reasons why we tell organizations don't use this is because something goes wrong. That's not the community's problem. That's your problem because you chose to do something that you weren't supposed to.
Right. So awesome. Hey, well, thanks for coming on the show and sharing all this great information. This is amazing show that we had today.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, my pleasure. And until next time, keep shipping.
You've been listening to the Azure DevOps Podcast, a show for developers and DevOps professionals shipping software using Microsoft technologies. Go to www.azuredevops.show for show notes and other episodes. On behalf of your host, Jeffrey Palermo, and our sponsors, thanks for listening, and may God bless you.